Accession number 31693, Reel 7.
Mr. Robson, Reel 7. Mr. Robson, Reel 7. So, on an average day, what kind of activity would you have from Reveille onwards?
Reveille was always 6:30. And of course, you always got up, went to breakfast, and always a substantial breakfast as well. We would parade outside the 2nd Platoon stores, and a roll call would be taken, make sure everybody was there. But prior to that, before going on parade, you would all have your tasks to do before going on parade, and that would be either the latrines. We all were responsible for our own barrack rooms, and then our barrack rooms, we had 2, 4, 8, I think, was it 2, 4, I think it was 10 in a room, in a barrack room in a Nizan hut. And in each Nizan hut there was an NCO, and he was responsible to keep a rota going for various tasks, for cleaning latrines, cleaning the rooms. And even then, your bed had to be made up, boxed, one blanket on and the rest around the box at the head. And again, even then, your lockers had to be clean, tidy, neat, nothing out of place. If you had a suitcase, it would go on top of the locker. If you had anything which you didn't want anybody else to see, it went in your suitcase. That was it. That was sacrosanct. Nobody was allowed, unless, for instance, they were doing a search. Sometimes they did.
That would be something being stolen, or something.
Something which had been stolen. As I mentioned before, no one was allowed to go anywhere else. Even if your mate was in another barrack room, you weren't allowed to go in to see if he was there. You had to knock on the door. And if there was no reply, you couldn't go in to see if he was in there. But we also had to make sure that the windows were cleaned. It was all dusted, very much like as I was saying when I was in training. Similar type of barrack room, although we're allowed to use the potbelly stove in the winter, if you could get some coal or coke. And when people actually see the jokes about coke actually being painted, it actually happened. They would actually paint coke to make sure that nobody had gone down and stole anything. That actually happened. But go back onto our daily routines. Once all it was satisfied, all the tasks have been done, because they used to be inspected by the platoon sergeant or the platoon colour sergeant. So we parade outside. He would inspect you, make sure you're clean, tidy. Your boots were cleaned. And then we would have to go. Once it got fell out, we'd go and stand by our tasks, the jobs, and they would be inspected. And we'll be tidy if they hadn't. And then you would go back and you would be given tasks, either cleaning the vehicles, cleaning the radios, and general, just keeping on top and tidy. Sometimes we would go and do extra training for Morse. Our training, our daily parade, would go around our job, i.e. signals. so you were keeping practicing your radio skills, and you would do some, a little bit of drill, not a lot, but enough to keep you ticking over. And at 12:30 was, we were fell out. Lunch used to start at about 12:45, and you weren't allowed to go. You weren't even allowed to go and queue up. And remembering that we had a battalion of over 700 strong, so we had some married and living out, but not a lot. So you would be still be talking about 500, 550 to go and have lunch. And you had to get lunch and then back on parade 12:45.
Just the hour. 1 hour.
1 hour.
Which included getting your food and
yeah. And you would go on parade again. You'd make sure that you clean your shoes, your boots again before the afternoon parade. Make sure your body's brushed. And then you again do an afternoon, again, basically signals orientated, just to keep your skills going and keep your skills up to date.
You mentioned vehicles. What vehicles did you have?
We had old Land Rovers, and if I remember right, we had an old one-ton truck to carry the equipment for three-tonner. For the signals to carry our stores when we went out in the field. But it was old Land Rovers, and fitting in the radios, it was again fairly basic, the equipment, not like what came on in a year, 2 years later, when it became, again, the equipment was updated. But our Land Rovers were our main vehicle, or should I say, for some. Mainly, it was on your feet.
Did you have to learn to drive as well? Has that been part of your training?
No. In the signals at that time, our drivers were actually supplied by the MT platoon, the motor transport platoon. We didn't have our individual drivers. Again, that only became later.
What about keeping in, you know, up to date with your rifle skills or weapon skills? Was any of that still there?
Yes, we still did those. Again, an NCO or a senior soldier would take you on your rifle drills, you know. I remember also I had a provisional driving license at that time. And we had no one in the platoon who could drive a motorbike. So we were all asked, "Who? Did anybody have a license for or provision license?" I had a motorbike when I was 16, 17 year old. When I went up from my push bike, I think I was about 17 when I got my motorbike. I think that was the earliest. You could drive, had a provisional driving license or a provisional license for a motorbike. So I was chosen to go on motorbike training. And it was the old BSA, and it was rigid front and back. The bikes were from the Second World War, and you had the compression. Because I've been thrown over, when I went to kickstart it, I've been thrown over the top of the bike. They were that strong if you didn't get the compression right. You could even actually break a leg if you didn't get it right. And I remember having, because I'd ridden a motorbike, after a week's training, I went on my test. And the motor transport officer, he was the guy who actually took me back for my test, and I knew him, but he didn't know me, because I knew him because he was adjutant at the depot when I was doing my training.
What was his name?
I'm trying to think of his name now. It's one name I can't remember. But it'll come back. Anyway, he took me through to Exeter, and he was riding a motorbike behind me, and it was all hand signals. The crash helmet, you had to wear a crash helmet as well, but the crash helmet which were issued in those days were the old paratroop helmets which are used to jump out of aircraft. And anyway, I got back, did my test, passed it, and I became a dispatch rider for the battalion. So that was another skill I had, was part of the signals. So I when the battalion was out on exercise, that was my job.
You mentioned the fact that the National Service was coming to an end, and you had 60-whatever percent of them still in the battalion. What was the relationship between them and yourselves as regulars? Because they may be feeling a bit demob happy with it all coming to a close.
Yeah, they did get demob happy, but we had a great rapport with them, really. What we used to do, because the signals was, I suppose you could call the elite of the battalion. And it was the elite of the battalion. We used to get a little bit more than, let's say, the riflemen. The privates or the riflemen of the battalion. The other elite were the band and bugles. They got a little bit more than anybody else.
When you say a little bit more, what do you mean?
We were looked upon as being the educated ones. So we were given a little bit more leeway than anybody else. As soon as you mentioned that you were signals, you know, if there was a slight something wrong somewhere, no problem, signals. We were the elite, and we became very insular, the signal platoon, to be perfectly honest. Not like in a rifle platoon where you had, or a rifle company where you had three rifle platoons, you intermixed. 100-odd blokes. I mean, they had to, because they worked together as rifle platoons and sections. They worked more together. But the signal platoon, we had our, as I say, about 40 of us. We became a little bit insular, but we came very, very close. Even to this day, when the signals get together, we all tend to congregate together. And in those days, we very much did. And I became friendly with the National Servicemen. We all used to go out together. And what we used to do is, on a Saturday night, we used to pool our money. We used to say, if there was a group of us in our bank room, we all wanted to go out, say, right, how much have we got? And if National Servicemen had 2 and 6, and a regular had 22 and 6, all used to go in the pile.
Were National Servicemen paid less than the regular?
Oh yeah. It was only in the latter part of their National Service training they got a little bit extra. But for those who were married, they had to send 3/4 of their pay home to their wives. They were poorly paid. I used to feel sorry for them. But they were only in it for 2 years. But again, and so on a Saturday night, we used to pool together, and we used to go out together as signals. And if we would say, right, let's go to Exmouth. Now, to get to Exmouth, there's no buses. So we used to have this standing order with this taxi driver, this guy who used to do taxiing. He was also a farmer. He used to use his car taxi on the farm as well, because it was always full of farm stuff, straw and everything else. And I must admit, if it had been MOT in those days, no way would it have passed MOT. No way. When he was driving, the steering wheel used to... It was never straight. And it was always a big wheel change, as though he was trying to keep the wheel straight. And he used to pick us up to go next month. And he used to charge us a few bob. And we'd have a night out in Exmouth, a few pints, and he'd pick us up and take us back.
What about duties? What duties did you have, if any, of course? I'm thinking of, guard duties.
Guard duty. Duties at that time, we used to do guard duty. What used to happen, there used to be 16 man guard, a lance corporal. Corporal, and used to have what they call a stick man. A stick man was the man who was the smartest on parade, chosen by the order officer and the platoon sergeant, and the normally a subaltern, and the sergeant, who was the battalion orderly sergeant, a corporal, who was guard commander, lance corporal, who was what they call IC reliefs. And we used to parade at 5:45 on a night time, so you would finish work at 4 o'clock, you would have early tea, then you would parade at about 5:30, 5:45, ready to fall in at 5:45. And you used to be inspected by the guard commander, make sure you're all right. And then when I talk about drill, it was proper drill, i.e. The guard would get on parade, you would come to attention, you would march 15 paces, halt, take up your dressing, and then you would wait for the subaltern to come and take the parade, i.e. inspect you. You used to be able to, at Heathfield Camp, the way you were looking, you could see down towards the battalion headquarters, which is where the subaltern used to come out of. And he would meet up with the battalion orderly sergeant, and they would march up. I mean, in step, marching correctly, we were brought to attention. But one of the other things we used to watch for was whether it was the adjutant and the RSM who would take the parade, inspect the guard. You could guarantee if they actually inspected the guard, 3/4 of the guard would be charged. Guarantee it. The adjutant at that time, as I said, was Captain McGregor Oakford and RSM Morris Taylor. And you used to be looking over and you'd see the door open up and out walk the adjutant and the RSM closely followed behind. And your heart used to drop to your boots, because they would inspect you. And I've seen guys actually stripped, take the jackets off, shirts inspected, underpants inspected by Captain McGregor Orford. My very, very, very first charge was on guard duty, and I was charged by Captain McGregor Oakford, and for an innocuous charge, really. What it was, in those days, to be a stick man, all the guys used to help you if you're in. So they would loan you a pair of boots, especially pulled up.
That includes soles and studs.
Yep, your 17 studs as well, and your toe and heel plates, your anklets. Everybody would help out, and if your jacket wasn't good enough, somebody whose jacket was a good jacket would loan you his jacket. But you also had to make sure that the trousers, because the old battle dress trousers, was the same shade as the top.
Well, might not be the same shade.
Yeah, it had to be the same shade. And in those days, it was the old khaki shirt, and you went out on parade, and you weren't allowed to wear a Windsor knot in those days. It was an ordinary knot, and you would go on parade, and he would come up, and he inspected me. Couldn't find a thing wrong, and I thought, yeah. As he was going to the next man, he looked over, and we used to have in those days shoulder titles, and Durham Light Infantry, and then underneath that was either brigade or divisional insignia, and we were in Southern Command, and we had the Southern Command insignia on there. Still remember it, red. Like a red shield with a white stripe down the middle, and in between those there was two stars, red stars. And he looked at it, got a hold of it, pulled it off, because there was no stitching on it, and it was glued on. And I got charged for that.
He must have had eyes like a hawk.
Believe me, he did. Because he found that I had a ground moon rifle. Because in those days, again, you picked your rifle out, and it had to be immaculate, because that was checked as well, stripped down on the parade ground, the rifle. And he checked. Take my jacket off. Belt and jacket out to ground them to make sure I had braces on, and the braces fortunately were mine, and I checked to see if I had my number on there, my last four numbers, 5970. I got charged, and instead of getting stick, I got stick alright. I went in front of the company commander, Major Moran. Lovely old fella, ex-wartime soldier, and he was my first company commander, Major Moran. Everybody used to call him Daddy Moran. And went in front of him the next morning, marched in front, very first charger I was on, and I got 3 days, what we used to call jankers, So I got 3 days CC. That was working in 2 hours on a night, all over the weekend, 2 hours on an afternoon as well, Saturday and Sunday, confined to barracks. And I also lost my PP, my permanent pass, for 3 months. It was automatic.
You must have been quite sore at that.
Yes, I was. I thought, you know, there was nothing wrong, I mean. Yeah.
So was that the usual kind of punishment for that kind of mishap, whatever you might call them?
Yeah.
Jankers, in effect.
Yeah.
And did that include things like polishing stones and going around the parade ground and picking up matchsticks, this kind of thing?
Picking up matchsticks, picking up cigarette ends, toothbrush. Cleaning.
Was that steps? Cleaning
steps? Cleaning steps with a toothbrush. Peeling spuds. You had your knife, fork and spoon. and you were going and peel potatoes. They're not the best things, because the old issue knives weren't the sharpest of things. Put it this way, it wouldn't cut a steak, and you'd have to go in, peel potatoes, clean the veg. Oh, I used to dread that job. Fortunately, on the regimental police, one of the guys I was friendly with, he was Lance Corporal, regimental police, and I remember the first Saturday, he went in, he would allocate the jobs. And I remember that in those days we used to work on a Saturday morning. So Saturday afternoon, from 2 until 4, you had to work. Then at 5 o'clock, before tea, you would go and parade. And then you would parade again at 6 o'clock to work 6 till 8. And then at 10 o'clock at night, you would go down in whatever kit that the had been laid down by the battalion orderly sergeant. So if it was best kit, you would parade at 10 o'clock at night outside the guard room, where they would play a bugle call. You would be inspected, and if you so desired, he might tell you to go and get changed and come back in something else. And then 6 o'clock in the morning, you would parade outside the guard room to make sure you hadn't done a bunk. And then you would parade out, as I say, 6 o'clock. No, but going back to that Saturday, the Saturday morning, a friend of mine just said, "No problem, Steve," he says, "I've got a nice little job for you." So all it was emptying some dustbins, and it only took us a half an hour, and I went and laid on my bed the rest hour and a half, but I still had to parade at 4 o'clock.
So very much depended upon the sergeant and what he was going to give you to do.
Oh yeah, what jobs? I've known the people actually in the guard room, and this particular provost sergeant we had, he would go and find the rustiest pieces of tin or corrugated iron he could find and take it back to the guard room to get the prisoners to clean them up. And the prisoners, fortunately, I never ever did any guard room time. That was for more serious crime. And the maximum the CEO could give you was 28 days. And I used to feel sorry for those guys, especially if they smoked, because all they were allowed was 3 cigarettes a day, one after breakfast, one after dinner, one after tea. And they had to be smoked in front of the provost corporal or the provost sergeant. And the cigarette end would have to be given back. And they were actually told when to stop smoking. I never had to do any time in the guard room, thank God.
And as I say, they were the more serious crime. What kind of crime might that be to get yourself into the guard room, in effect?
Disobeying order. Being late on parade. Depending on how many times you've been late on parade. I mean, some of them you wouldn't have thought, being late back from a night out, being drunk was another one. And I can remember we had one guy there, and everyone will know him, and he, because his dad won the VC, Adam Wakenshaw won the VC at Mercy Patrol. He was actually a national serviceman, his son, with the battalion. He didn't want to be there, but the DLI claimed him, and he hated every minute of his national service days. And he was always in bother. And I remember a tale, the CEO at that time saying, "What would your dad think?" And he used to say My dad was a drunken bum anyway. How true it was, I don't know.